Well, I hope you've been enjoying tonight's program with Linda Moulton Howe as we talk about these incredible stories. And now we'll have conversations with Linda, your questions, your stories, and maybe if you're a whistleblower, you'll share something with us that she can run with. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, any updates on the Baltic Sea story?
Nothing has changed that I know of because of the weather that they're going to try, I think, to do an expedition maybe March or April, and I will find out and do a report because I am really puzzled, like so many others, about what is that object down on that floor and why does some of it look like sort of almost like whipped cream that is frozen, and why are there all those 90-degree angles and the straight angles if it is something that is, let's say, the last century or two, what could it be? And if it's before the last ice age, which is what that archaeologist suggested, remember there was a big report in the Swedish newspapers and the media that an archaeologist had said that perhaps this was truly an object from before the last ice age. Well, the last ice age goes back to its maximum about 18,000 years ago. That would make the object in the bottom older than 18,000 years. So there are so many questions, and until they can get down there, maybe with technology that can do drills or do something to find out what it's made out of, I don't think we're going to have any idea. It's all speculation at this point.
What have you been working on these days, Linda?
Well, I am working on a fifth book, and I am trying to see if I can get as many leads as possible on this, I think, extraordinary underground pyramid alleged in Alaska. I have done a lot of research that I'm still working on and haven't reported, and I would like to put out there again tonight to the Coast listeners and to earthfiles.com viewers that if anybody has any information about this possible alleged underground pyramid that may be west of Mount McKinley, 50 miles or so, may be at the latitude, longitude that we have found these anomalies, or even in a different place, I would really like to hear from you. My website is earthfiles at earthfiles.com. Always think of a reporter who files news about the earth, earthfiles at earthfiles.com. And all requests for confidentiality, I always honor. My goal is the pressure of fact. And there are clearly people out there who have been exposed to something unusual underground in Alaska, and if there's anybody who can get more information to me, I am trying to get substantive facts, knowing that if the government of the United States has covered this up and repressed it, if that's the case, since World War II, that there are all kinds of channels in place to keep me in the media and you in the public from knowing what is underground in Alaska. So help me if you can. And I'll also, in addition to my email, there is the Earth Files Facebook page. You can get to it easily by going to www.earthfiles.com and clicking on the upper image of the Earth Files Facebook. I have a college student who helps keep all of those emails organized and communicates with me the most important ones, so all of you can communicate that way as well. And George, who knows what might come out of the woodwork next?
That's right.
That keeps pushing this story forward. So I live a life of constantly feeling like I'm in a river that is moving very quickly all of the time, but I am fascinated by the changing planet, by the possibility that we may finally be introduced to other life in the universe, and that we have the media that we have in Coast, Earth Files, and others to help report to the public that doesn't hear the facts from some other media.
All right, back to the phones now. We go to Hanford, California, first-time caller. Dustin, you're on with Linda Moulton Howe. Go ahead.
Good evening, George, Linda.
Hi.
I'm calling from Hanford, California. My first time caller.
Good.
Thank you.
I had a question about the pyramids. I didn't get the location where they're located in between Mount McKinley and what was the other city?
Well, we don't know if we have a location of a pyramid. We have a latitude and longitude that was discovered by a retired Navy captain. It goes all the way back to after I returned from Göbekli Tepe, Turkey. So that was the end of June. And I started getting this information about the possibility of this dark pyramid from an Army counterintelligence guy who had been stationed at Fort Richardson. That was in July. And this story has been unfolding with more people coming forward with family knowledge that there is this, what is referenced as a dark pyramid underground in Alaska. And the reference point right from the beginning was always west of Mount McKinley. That's a big range. The Denali Park is huge. But it is so interesting that the retired Navy captain who has been helping me for a long time and is skilled in looking at things like Google Maps, looking for anomalies, looking for geometries that are not normally in a landscape, such as four 90-degree corners. This is how he found this, what we're calling the darker green square. And then when he measured the dark green square, it turned out that each side of the square at this latitude longitude was exactly twice the length of the base of Cheops in Egypt. That seemed to be quite a coincidence. And then as we have gone further and finding out about this high power creek that nobody seems to have any information about why it was named High Power Creek, it is only 5 miles from this latitude longitude. We'll call it the darker green square. But when I paid the photographer and the helicopter people to go there and check it out from 3,000 feet, it doesn't look like a square. It might have in a different season. That's the problem. We are being able to do things only in slips of time. And if
they actually let you fly over the airspace?
There's no restriction whatsoever anywhere in that area. If you go into the park, there is. But that was another very interesting thing to us. If this were an underground secret pyramid that was capable of powering the nation of Canada, and our government has known about it since, let's say, World War II, or at least since building the Dew Line and White Alice in that area, why wouldn't there have been some sort of a flight restriction over that area long ago?
You would think there would be. Yeah.
Well, in talking with some of the pilots who have communicated with me, they have said, well, you know how Intel likes to hide things in plain sight. And so if there was a restriction over what appears to be nothing but open-ended tundra, well, you'd have many more people saying, why do you have a restricted airspace over open tundra? So perhaps the thinking through intelligence minds is, if you don't need to, you don't restrict an airspace because that just raises more questions. I don't know if that's a fact, but we are in, clearly, a fascinating, multifaceted mystery that is teaching us a great deal that none of us knew about the Alaska area, of what we were doing there during World War II and after in all these constructions. And I still think that one of the most solid sources is the son of the Western Electric electrical engineer that was a Bell Labs unit working between 59 and 61, allegedly 700 feet underground. And that timing is so precise around the time of Alaska also becoming a state. And when you start looking back into the history of the United States and what we have done there since we got Alaska from Russia, remember, for some money that they probably have bemoaned for decades, that they sold Alaska with all of its minerals and water and perhaps a many thousands-year-old pyramid underground that could power the nation of Canada. That is what I'm trying to find out. I need, obviously, the solid evidence of something like drilling underground or even magnetic anomalies. That was reported in 1978, magnetic anomalies by the crew that might have been flying for intelligence in that helicopter. And if that's true, why is it that there are no reports of anomalies by pilots, at least in the last several years? I've asked many people about this, and no one is aware. And when the Jayhawk helicopter took Frank Flavin to the latitude, longitude, they did not have any magnetic problems or any other problems in their helicopter in September of 2012. Is this something that can be shut off? Is it something that comes on and off in cycles? Are we in any control of it whatsoever? Is it something that is just 150 feet underground and goes down to a base of 700 feet that, as the one pilot told the retired military guy, that this is thousands of years old and no one knows who made it? Well, this is why this is tantalizing to keep going, but I need the pressure of fact, which means I need people with firsthand knowledge if they're out there.
Let's go to our Skype caller, Clifford in Bentonville, Arkansas. Hey, Cliff, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. Thanks for calling.
I have a question for you or Linda or just whichever one might want to take this. It's about the 2012 prophecy. The media and NASA seem to be trying really hard to debunk what may or may not happen on December 21st, 2012.
Right.
Do you think something may indeed happen?
I've always said that I think that we could have some solar event at any time, in that the Mayans knew about that, and the sun is really starting to act up. So the timing there is ironic. How about you, Linda?
Well, I have always thought that the stone Mayan calendar had probably been inspired by extraterrestrials that cohabited with the Mayans, and that something that was 5,125 years old coming to an end at the winter solstice of 2012. It's intriguing, but even Jose Arguelles, who wrote The Mayan Factor, one of the more, I would say, provocative books from 78, he really described this as the closing, if you wanted to make a metaphor, the closing of the chapter on the evolving timeline that we're in on this planet and the opening up of a new one. And so, to me, I've always thought that this was going to be a time of perhaps revelations, perhaps of encountering, finally, other intelligent life in the universe, to get us out of the cemented blinders that we are in now, and that's what the end of the 5,125-year stone calendar, to me, has always been about, the closing of a chapter and the opening up of a new one, which I hope is going to bring much more truth and honesty to this planet than it has been living. And the sun, I mean, we're in a what's called a solar maximum period, but this has been, without question, the weakest solar max period perhaps in 80 years.
So far.
And it was predicted to be such by David Hathaway at NASA over the last 5 years. And right now, we will know, George, in another 6 or 7 or 8 months, because the solar maximum is supposed to kick in from somewhere like around the summer to the fall of 2013. And that's not very long from now. And that will be solar maximum. And we will see for our own eyes, we will know if there is anything unusual from the sun. But so far, it has not been acting with any kind of real energy that some of the solar maxes in the past have.
Next up, let's go to Mary Jo in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hey, Mary Jo, go ahead.
Well, got a very interesting story.
All right.
My boyfriend was very ill in the hospital. And when I would go to visit him, I would take him hand carry little funny cards and give them to him. And I brought them all home when he passed, and I put them in a dough box in the drawer, and they were all in there. I fell and broke my hip, and lo and behold, one of the cards was out of the dough box drawer, and it was open, and it was on the floor, and it said, it was one of the cards I had sent him, and it was open to the part that said, get well soon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't know how it got out of the drawer, and it was on the floor, and I was totally and completely amazed. I don't know how it got out of the drawer. And it was on the floor, and it was open to get well soon.
See? Well, we all know how they come out of the drawer.
Well, now we're into this fascinating question of how would another dimensional intelligence, after the moment of death, be able to interact with the matter world here and move anything, touch someone's hair, be in a room where somebody can see the person fully clothed, they look solid, and then they fade out in the air. These are the textures of so many human stories of past relatives or friends that you really wonder, how does the other dimension to which the soul goes after the moment of death somehow be able to interact back with this one?
Linda, give out your website if you would.
Earthfiles at earthfiles.com.
That's Linda Moulton Howe's website. We'll come back with final phone calls in just a moment. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, by the way, we'll have, of course, those special Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines for you. So make sure you're ready for that, plus maybe a little spooky interview or two. And then I'll tell you tomorrow what's in store for the rest of the week, as Coast to Coast is live 7 nights a week for you, right here around the world on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, let us take final phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Linda Moulton Howe with us, and of course, your phone calls. Linda, how often do you get a good story from the calls here?
Well, there are so many subjects every week, and some of them might come through Coast. I get, like you do, hundreds and hundreds of emails every week from all over the world, literally. So it's hard to say how many would come from Coast, but certainly a lot of people are listening and are extremely helpful.
All right, back to the calls we go. Final calls, Vancouver, Canada. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Brian.
Real quick, a piece of news. The Senate today voted down indefinite detention of Americans, so all the fear porn hucksters out there, other radio hosts, I don't know what they're going to talk about, but maybe people don't have to get so hysterical about the NDAA because it was voted down. But that's not why I called. I suggest everybody in the audience check out what Clark McClellan has been saying, the former NASA employee. He recently blew the lid on the fact that he was on the scene at Kecksburg and watched the recovery of that craft, and his book has got so much information in it. The question for you, Linda, first of all, are there any UFO reports lately? And could Coast to Coast get Clark McClellan on, because his book,
we've tried to get Clark
so much information.
We've tried to get Clark on, and you know, he was on, I think, a long time ago. Linda, do you know him?
Yeah, I do, and I'm not certain about the statement that he was at Kecksburg. I mean, I know so much about Kecksburg, and I know I've interviewed a truck driver. I've interviewed people who were there in the fire and the police, and something highly unusual crashed there. Do you know what Clark is saying in his book?
He's not there now.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, that I know who Clark McClelland is, and I have met and talked with him in the past, and I've done a great deal of work on Kecksburg, but those two have never been related together. So I don't know until I see his book and read him, but I certainly can see if it's possible to get him for an interview so that we could follow up.
All right, next up, we go to Joel in Cypress, Texas on the wild card line. Hey, Joel, go ahead.
Hey, George. On your pizza roll, what happens is a microwave excites water molecules. It's about the only thing that that particular frequency absorbs.
Okay.
And water vapor absorbs in discrete little frequencies, just like carbon dioxide does. Inside the microwave, the little bit of moisture that was in the dough would have been easy to evaporate and go through the porous part of the dough. The part that's trapped in the cheese could get really hot. You pick it up, you don't feel the heat, but it's because it heats kind of from the inside
out. It's there. Wow, so, it's there.
Anyhow, just to mention a few little extremes to put the Sandy tragedy in context, I've learned a great deal from Coast to Coast. You're definitely the force for good on this planet. And one of the authors you had on was Graham Hancock, and he talked about, you know, at the start of the Holocene, which was 13,000 years ago, and the Ice Age ended, that sea levels were 440 feet lower, and that there's evidence that there could have been a 50-foot sea level rise in one day's time. So that kind of gives an idea of sea level changes. When Yellowstone caldera blew, it blew 240 cubic miles of granite into space and covered the Great Plains with 6 feet of ash. Tropical storm Claudette, when it hit the Texas coast in September of 1979, dropped 42 inches of rain in 24 hours on Alvin, Texas, which is the record for North America. The highest tsunami on record was July 9th, 1958, in Lituya Bay, Alaska. So basically, Sandy, if you would go to a site called What's Up With That by meteorologist Anthony Watts, he has a half dozen articles a day. It's the most viewed site on global warming. I'm co-author of the book Slaying the Sky Dragon. I'm also co-founder of Principa Scientific. We've got dozens of articles posted.
I know your voice.
Right, I've called in several times before. And I just would urge Linda to do a little more research that Dr. Alexander is correct, that the Earth is a soul school, but the carbon forcing is a force of evil. And that carbon dioxide does not have the capability of warming the planet. It doesn't behave like a blanket. There's no way of capturing radiative heat at all. And I'd be more than happy to provide Linda with information on that, or more than happy to participate in a debate on it.
Well, I honor the pressure of fact in science, and I know that CO2 does in fact create a blanket around this planet. And methane is now adding to it, and that when you go back to October 30th, the day after the superstorm Sandy hit the East Coast, it was very interesting what Michio Kaku said. He's the quantum physicist in teaches at New York City College. And this was his quote: "This storm was a new animal." And the way he described it was that Hurricane Sandy is something that had not been seen before, because it was a warm hurricane that collided with a cold jet stream that went all the way to Florida. The jet stream did, the cold air. And then those combined air masses moved up the coast and collided with a third nor'eastern air mass that wrapped around this charged up hurricane, And that produced this three-part hybrid superstorm that's unique in weather history to date. And that what we are moving into, and for people who are denying this, they're just not dealing with physics. We are definitely in a warming time, and when you get warmer air that can hold more moisture, you're going to have areas that have the flooding like they are having in England and have had in Venice, and storms are going to be more violent in nature. The computer modeling shows that. And instead of turning away and saying, no, this is not going to happen, we have got to face the reality of it, which is what that CIA commissioned report is about, facing the realities of what is coming and how do we prepare and become smarter in living on this planet that is going to continue to warm up.
Joel, thank you. Let's go to Toronto, Canada, and it's Nasi. Did I get your name correct?
Actually, it's Nace.
Nace. Okay, it is. Go ahead.
I've got a comment and a question for Linda. I'm sorry to hear about your burn, George. Just to remind you, though, in the future, as a rule, when heating up things such as pastry and all of that, it is definitely cooked from the inside to a molten level. So it's kind of like the popcorn thing. You've got to sort of let it cool before you touch it, even if the outside is lukewarm.
Yeah, that's the problem. I was tricked by the outside.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, my question for Linda is, has anybody come up with a theory yet that considering the multitude of species that we have on this planet, that whether or not, I don't know if you could call it the divine source or consciousness, had decided to put everything from, I guess, from one end of the universe, a species from each particular planet, presuming that there was life, there's life on other planets and other galaxies, in one particular mixing pot to see if they could coincide with just the core coagulant being love?
Well, now we're into sort of philosophy. On the science side, I know that perhaps one of the most provocative parts of the Earth to Crick and Watson and Orgel back at the time when the DNA molecule received the Nobel Prize, that those scientists were puzzled then and continue to be about why there would be one double spiraled DNA molecule for most life on the Earth. And that was what provoked them to do this very brilliant paper for the journal Icarus back in the late 70s about panspermia. And they were borrowing from Arrhenius, who was a 1908 Nobel Prize winner in chemistry. And it was Augustus Arrhenius who first proposed that the only thing that made sense to explain life on this planet was panspermia. Panspermia is the placing from away from the Earth, from the outside, life onto the Earth, seeding the Earth, and then the seeding taking hold. And then Darwin would be partly correct on the evolution of many species, but according to what I've been exposed to and others, that Homo sapien and primates are definitely the result of the manipulation of already evolving primates, manipulating DNA to keep sort of refining the standing of primates for some unknown reason, and we would be the latest model. And so if all of that is true, then surface life on this Earth, ocean life on this Earth, underground life on this Earth could be all from a seeding by another organic intelligence somewhere in this universe. That would be the panspermia part. And then as that life took hold, there would be Darwinian evolutionary forces, and then that which did the seeding may or may not have come here to manipulate DNA. There is also a stronger and increasing argument that the carbonaceous chondrites that have so much organic matter and carbon-based matter in them might have been the cedar from someplace else to this earth. Any way you slice it, the sort of multiversity of life on earth has the possibility of many different sources, which makes this planet something truly, truly active. Amazing.
Yep, sure is. I don't think it's one of a kind, but it's pretty amazing. Henry, Sun Valley, California. Go ahead, Henry.
Hi. I have a quick question about an odd incident involving what I believe to be an alien actually happening when I was in the Air Force. Just to prove this base that I was at, off at Air Force Base, I actually saw the space shuttle Atlantis, STS-117, come in for its special landing due to the storm down south. This was July in 2007. A month after that, the United States Air Force had the Minot nuke base incident. All the while during this several-month period, I had a very bad staph infection that had been going on multiple months. I was getting very, very sick. One night in my dorm room, I felt a thump on my bed, and which I encountered, awoke to, and shoved my body up rapidly to an alert state on the bed, with a small creature, pea soup green, very muscular, but only about 3 feet tall, pretty thin, but still muscular, like a chimpanzee. It looks like it could deliver a haymaker right to my face.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, I've seen some reports these beings can be distinguished by the types of their eyes. This had a perfectly circular eye pattern, as opposed to a slot or an almond. And I'm wondering if Linda can give me any tips.
Well, you said it correctly yourself. There are so many varieties that are described by people, both consciously and unconsciously, whether it's an abduction and they find the person finds themselves inside of a round room in what is assumed to be a craft, or in the bedroom, like what you're describing, people wake up and they're is such a wide variety of various kinds of entities, lights, buzzing beams in bedrooms, cars, backyards, and that the round eye certainly has been described. In fact, I think one of the most interesting aspects of Earth history are the so-called Sumerian period, that there are ceramic statues or stone statues that have been found allegedly of the gods. And what are they wearing? They look like perfectly round, thick goggles. What does that mean? Are they in this category of what you're describing of entities that interact with this planet with perfectly round eyes, large, that project? Or is it some sort of a goggle, a literal goggle? And then the wide variety that goes from the tall, white-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, beautiful-looking beings to the standing-up reptilians that have been drawn by many people. Like one person said that they were out riding a horse in Colorado and came around a bend, and there was their quote was, there was an alligator standing up beside the road. Well, what is the bottom line reality of all of these different types, and how many might be holographic projections? And I'll leave you with this thought. There was a person that I knew in California. His father had worked for the Department of Energy and had a very classified job, and the father knew about extraterrestrial biological entities and told the son. And this is directly from the son to me. So it's a firsthand experience, told me that the son one night woke up in a start, as I recall, was hearing a strange low buzzing sound in the room. But the big thing was that standing right next to his bed, the head almost up to the ceiling, he estimated that the being was 7 feet tall at least. And in this case, the young man jumped with adrenaline pumping so that his feet now are on top of his bed, and he is looking eye to eye with what he said looked like a green alligator, except
a reptilian.
That he could see his dresser through the head of the being and knew this isn't organic. This is some sort of a holographic technology. And as soon as he thought that and started to reach, it popped away. So that, I think, absolutely happened. There have been variations on that story. So that means that there are a lot of things that are projected to humans that look real, but they actually are some sort of a three-dimensional holographic projection. And then you get down to the question, why would advanced intelligences seem to play toy with humans and with human minds by, in some cases, presenting themselves as organic beings, in other cases as holographic three dimensions, in other cases where Jim Sparks, who was an abductee from the Southeast, and he remained conscious through most of his taking through walls into craft.
It's the clock, Linda. We got to run.
And he said they could project molecules and look translucent the way we would describe ghosts. So what are we dealing with?
See you after Christmas into the new year. You'll be on in January. For Dave Buginski, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Alex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.